Said, we will start off on the other thing that's in there. I'm pretty sure I put a link to my website. My website is where you're going to get most of the stuff other than the book for this class. So please write this URL down. Dismiss. PROFLIMANEK. ProfLimanek.com. All right, so this is a tool that I use because anything that I post on the college website technically becomes the property of the college. So there is some work product that I like retaining ownership over, so that's the reason why I put it on my own website. Plus, truth be told, I've been running my own website since I started teaching college 23 years ago. So it's just very straightforward, very simple. I have a calendar on here that's applicable to both of the classes I'm teaching here at QuinSig this semester. Obviously, you know most of them because I believe they give you access to the academic calendar for the year. So, important dates for you. We've already started classes, so we don't have to worry about that. Ad drop is next Wednesday. Withdrawal begins on September 11th, next Thursday. Topics for your papers. You're going to have to write a paper, which I'll talk about in a little bit. Topics are due Friday, September 12th. You will send me an email basically telling me what you want to write about. Like I said, I'll talk about that in a few minutes. That's not you because that's a Wednesday. That's not you because that's a Monday. Midterm grades are due towards the end of October. We have Veterans Day off, Tuesday, November 11th. Last day to withdraw with a W is November 14th. We have no class on Thursday, November 27th, because that's Turkey Day. And your papers are due Tuesday, December 2nd. Last day for you guys listening to my voice is Tuesday, December 11th. And then your final will be on the second to the last day of finals, Tuesday, December 16th. Those dates, of course, are subject to change, but unlikely, because you don't really change holidays. And I can't imagine that a college is going to revise its exam system. As far as the dates for your exams, I haven't decided those yet. I'll give you like a week or two in advance notice when we're getting close. All right, any questions on the calendar? All right, couple of things to notice. First, I do have a dedicated page for your class, PSC221, right here, state and local government. That is you. And on it, I have excerpts from the syllabus. So if you haven't read the syllabus, I'll give you the most important stuff now. If you need to contact me, because I do not have an office, I do not have office hours. Shit, I should have said that to my class yesterday. I totally forgot. Anyways, if you need to reach me, other than when you're with me, you're going to have to do it by email. You could use the college email. But keep in mind, I only can access my college email when I'm actually in my office at home, which I'm there most days. So generally, I open up the email in the morning and see if anything's crazy going on, you know, that happened the night before. So if you do send me a message, I will eventually see it. If, however, it is an emergency and you are looking for or need an immediate response, use proflimanic@gmail.com. That will go right to my phone. And so long as I'm not meeting with a client, I will get back to you. I'm an attorney, so I do have client appointments. But that's the quickest way to get. But again, if it's just fluffy stuff, send it here. Again, try to just reserve this only for emergency situations. So, like, for instance, you were driving down the road, you got in a car accident, and the sign impaled you through your shoulder because it came through the glass. You know, an emergency. I'm going to be in the hospital, you know? Something like that. My tummy is achy and I'm not coming to class. It doesn't really constitute as an emergency. Unless, of course, you're vomiting a lung. And if you're vomiting up your lung, go to the hospital. The book. Political science books generally don't change, and I've been using this Bowman and Kearney book since I first started teaching this class 20 years ago.
But unfortunately, as they keep pumping out new editions every single year, the price goes up and up and up and up. And the last time I looked at it, I think it was like $150. The book is like about this big, about yay thick. $150 for a book? That's ridiculous. So what I did is I ripped up one of my old copies that I purchased, and I made it viewable inside Blackboard. So long as you don't mind reading PDFs on your device, you'll be able to access it, and so long as you have connection. If you'd rather get a hard copy of the book, feel free. Buy it on Amazon. Go and get one of the past editions. Get a used copy. You might be able to pick it up for a couple of bucks. I just know some people like reading books as opposed to digital screens. Whatever works for you is fine. You are strongly urged to buy the book. I advise you to buy the book, but I'm not going to force you to buy the book. And I say that because I don't teach out of the book. I have my own units developed, and my materials are my own. But by reading the book, you'll get another perspective on the concepts we're talking about. Plus, I target topics to get us through the whole semester. Sometimes there are subjects that I have to leave out or that I've cut out over the semesters, and they may be in the book, so they may be gap fillers in there. Plus, if you want to learn a little extra credit, at the beginning of every single chapter, there are chapter focus questions. If you write those out and send them to me, I'll count those as extra credit.
All right. Grade-wise, there are five components that make up your grade. Three regular exams, which each are 15%. Your final exam, which is 35%. And your paper, which is 20%. At a minimum, you are required to do those five things. My exams are not cumulative. So, exam one will be the information we cover for the first couple of weeks. Exam two will be the next couple of weeks. Exam three will be the next couple of weeks. And the final is just the fourth exam. So whatever we cover November into December, that will be on the final. I do that because, as you're going to see, we're going to cover a ton of stuff, and it would be very unreasonable of me for me to expect you to remember everything. Simple, no cumulative exams. But it will be longer. I do that because I've noticed that students who've never had me before kind of do meh on the first exam because they don't know what to expect. But as the semester goes on, if it's a hardworking student, their grades go up. So if you're on an upward trajectory, it only makes sense that I make the last exam the most, percentage-wise, just to help you pass the class. The exams themselves are multiple choice with some essays in it, short essays. Questions that you can answer in like a paragraph. They will be through Blackboard, so you will not take your exams in class. You'll be doing those on a off day. And basically what I do is I try doing it on the weekend, because that's when most people have off, and then we'll play democracy. When do you want your exam? And I'll let you pick your. And if your class picks a Friday and you can't do a Friday because you're working the 12-hour shift, come talk to me after class. Say, Professor, I gotta work. Can you help me out? That's the amazing thing about Blackboard. I can schedule yours for a different time. If for some reason you miss it, I will impose a penalty, but I'll also let you do it later. Generally, I will not let people do it before the class, though, as a rule. All right, now your paper.
Your paper has to be a college-level research paper on any topic you want to write about, so long as it is relevant either to state or local government. It does not have to be your hometown. It does not have to be Massachusetts. If you want to write about something going on in California, or you want to write about something going on in Texas, I don't care, that's fine. Just so long as it's government related. And what does this mean? Anything dealing with schools, anything dealing with crime, anything dealing with law enforcement, anything that would be a local or state issue. So what's not a local or state issue? War! The actions of the CIA! No, that's U.S. government talking, not state local government. So, generally speaking, I found over the years the students have an easier time writing about things that you're interested in. So if there's something that happened in your hometown and you're interested in it, that might be a good topic to write about. Last semester, the last time I did this class, I did U.S. government last semester. Last time I taught this class, a kid was pissed off that his town put a stop sign at a particular intersection. And his primary argument was that that stop sign was creating more traffic than was in that intersection before the said stop sign. So what did he do? Well, he went and he interviewed the people in town hall. He went and talked to the chief of police, talked to the highway guy, basically trying to find out why the stop sign was there. And in doing so, he also learned about the whole process of what it takes to actually get a stop sign put in. Because it's not as easy as the town just simply saying, boom, we're going to put a stop sign in. If a town is going to do that, it also has to get approval from the state. It has to get reviewed by the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. And that is a whole different level. So this kid found one thing that pissed him off, and he put together a hell of a paper. So just because you may think something's trivial, you never know where it may lead. So obviously the pressure is on. You have 2 weeks to come up with what you want to write about. And if you're unsure, you can send me emails and ask me, and I'll try giving you guidance. The paper itself, well, actually, I'll
talk about the paper components when we go to the paper section of the website.
The paper, as we saw on the calendar, is due a week and a half before the end of the semester. I do that just to give me time to grade it. Because when I grade your papers, what I have a tendency to do is I map out what you need average-wise for your final exam. Because at that point, I'll have a good understanding where you are standing. So I'll tell you like what your current average is, what you need to keep that average, what you need to boost it. I'll tell you literally the score you need on your final exam. So I use it that sense. And I don't grade it hard because I'm not an English professor. Again, I'll show you when we get to the paper section. Pretty much it's a lesson in following directions. If you follow directions well, you get a good grade on the paper. Students who fail, literally fail, because they don't follow directions. All right, an extra credit. Sometimes, depending upon how the class is doing, I may put in a pop quiz. If I say quiz time, it's just extra credit. I don't use punitive quizzes. So if you fail a quiz, it's no big deal. But if you do well, obviously that's extra point. And I've already told you about the homeworks. Those would be the chapter focus questions. And there is a couple other things that I will throw at you to give you extra credit opportunities. One of which is, I am very knowledgeable on local government because I'm an elected selectman in my hometown. And in on October, on a Monday night, we have town meeting. And if you're willing to go to Sutton, Massachusetts and sit in the audience and take notes on what we cover in town meeting, I'll give you extra credit points. So I'll do things like that. Or if you can't come to ours and your town has a town meeting, you know, you can watch or go and attend it, or you can watch if they stream it on YouTube, and you know, just give analysis of what took place. Give me extra credit. I do all that I can because this should not be a hard class, but it kind of is. Because if you've gotten any civics, it's what's going on at the U.S. government level. And the funny thing is even though that's what drives the news and the media, oh, Donald Trump, oh, Congress, what's going on down in D.C. actually has the least impact on your day-to-day lives. What's happening in your hometown? What's the property tax level? Are the teachers pushing for a raise? What's the cost of maintaining the roads? Those are the things that actually have the biggest impact, but that's the level of government people know the least about. So I'll do all that I can to encourage you to understand
and be interested, hopefully. Here's the catch. No AI.
No AI. If you use your AI, if you use any type of chat, GPT, or anything like that, other than Grammarly, to just check your grammar before you submit it, I use 4 AI detectors, and as far as I know, nothing has slipped by me yet. If I catch you using AI, you'll get a 0 on whatever it is. So if it's an essay on the exam, you get a 0 on that. If it's your paper, you'll get a 0 on that. You will have a chance to refute it if you can provide evidence. But I'll be honest with you, the only way really to prove that you didn't do it is if you have handwritten notes or a handwritten draft. But if you do everything on your device, you probably don't have that. So just be warned. I am looking.
Why? Well, call me old-fashioned, but why the hell are you in college if you're going to try going through college letting computers do all your work for you? You're wasting your time. You know, you're actually here to learn.
And if you do that, then you'll get value out of it. Because at the end of the day, when you go out into the real world, no one really gives a shit. You know, what grade you got in a college-level state and local government class. They don't care. That doesn't have meaning to them. That doesn't have value to them. While this class may not help you get a job, this class will help you understand what's going on in your own community. And like I said previously, I'm not kidding you. What happens in your town has the most direct impact of your life. So there's the value.
But if you let the computer do the work for you,
you just wasted your whole semester. So just don't do it.
Questions on grades. All right, attendance policy.
Just like my grading policy, I have my own attendance policy. Every single professor that you're going to come across has their own. Mine is based on my view of you being adults. And also terms that are in your student handbook. Did you know that the moment you sign the papers to become a student at Quinn Sig, you're actually required to go to class? It actually says it in the handbook. So my expectation is that you are here every single class. But I understand life. Life is complicated. Life is not easy. And sometimes conflicts arise. So just like if you were my employee, I would give you sick days. Well, I'm going to do that throughout the semester. We meet generally twice a week for 14 weeks. I will allow you, with no penalty, to miss up to 4. You don't have to send me an email. Professor, my tummy, sir. Professor, my car's broke. Beginning of class, if you're in the seat, I'll give you a check. If not, I'll give you an X. You're either here or you're not. I don't need excuses. You have your 4 days. Because I give you 4, that generally means I don't give excused absences. Because again, I give you 4. So if you got a doctor's appointment or a dentist appointment, maybe it just happened to conflict because you made it 6 months ago. Big deal. There you go. There's your debt. That's what it's there for. You will not get penalized for being absent unless you exceed 4. So 5 to 12. I'll take 3 points off your final average. I do that again because you are required to be here. So if you're required to be here and you're not, You're going to get some type of penalty at some point. Anything over 12, you get an automatic F, by the way. Why? Well, because if you've missed half the classes, you're probably failing anyways, so it is what it is. Now, if you do have something significant, I got to go to jury duty. I got food poisoning. I'm in the hospital. Something like that, let me know and I'll work with you. The other thing is I understand that most of you are adults. There's always one or two that's not. Assuming you're all adults, you might have jobs. If something comes up work-related, let me know in advance. I will work with you. But generally speaking, you got your 4 days. What happens if you're late? Oh my God, professor's a hypocrite. He's got a tardy policy and he was late on the first day. No, no, what it says there is, I'm not going to penalize you if you come late. Because I know what it's like trying to get across campus. I know what it's like trying to get to college. Just driving up West Boylston Street some days is a pain in the tuchus. If you are running a few minutes late, I don't care, come to class. You're not going to get penalized. You won't get scolded. If you come in with food, I may ask, where's my cut? But other than that, you know, it's no big deal. I don't lose any sleep over it. I'd rather have you come in 10, 15 minutes late than just blow the whole class off. The only time I'll penalize you if it's habitual. Class after class after class after class. And again, I won't just impose a penalty. I'll pull you aside and be like, hey, yo, can you just do me a favor and show up on time? Why? Well, we have two doors that are very loud when you open them. And if you come in, everyone's going to see you. It's going to be a distraction. And if you disregard that chat, that's when I'll penalize you. And what will happen is I'll just start counting the tardies as absences. Oh, there's one thing I forgot to mention. What happens if you make it all the way through the end of the semester and come to every single class? I'll give you a bonus. I'll give you a perfect attendance bonus. And I have on here a default of 3 points, plus 3 to your final average. But I am a sick son of a bitch. I am a social Darwinist. I believe in survival of the fittest. And if we get down to the end, and there's only one person in our group, which is currently at 9. Someone's missing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, one person said they weren't going to be here. One kid dropped out, so at 9. If we get down and there's only one person left that has perfect attendance, I may give them up to 10 points, depending upon my mood when I do final grades. So, if everybody gets it, 3 points. But if we get down to that final week, let's see who the last man or woman is staying. No, I don't want you Tonya Harding. You know Tonya Harding? You know that reference? Who was Tonya Harding? What did she do that made her infamous?
She wrote songs in the air.
Yeah, so she's going for the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And she takes an iron pipe, she hires a goon that knocks out her greatest competition. Don't do that! That's criminality. But if you happen to get the plague and someone next to you, oh, no. I would love it if everybody. Actually, I'll put that, if everybody gets perfect attendance, I could do that one. I never thought about that one. If everybody gets perfect attendance, I'll give everybody 10 points. How's that? Encourage the group. All right, we'll see how it works out. All right. Questions on attendance. By the way, if you can't tell, I do have a sense of humor. I'm a Gen Xer. So I was raised at a time when everything in life was actually regarded as it is. Fucking hilarious. Life is a joke. Everyone is funny. And you could make fun of everyone and everything. Because at the end of the day, we're all human beings and we're all funny. But nowadays, oh, everything politically correct, oh, you can't say anything about this person. Everyone was funny. I listen to Richard Pryor and Robin Williams, all the great comedians. Dennis Miller, hilarious. So they kind of imbued a sense of humor on me. Life is too short. It could end in a moment. Why go through life miserable? I'd rather laugh. So don't take anything, well, actually that's not true. Take the subject matter that I share serious. But just bear with me on my warped sense of humor. I'll never direct it at anybody the way. I'm not mean. I'm not cruel. I just like to laugh. All right. The other thing that you can get on our page on my website, I do teach by PowerPoint. I do that for a reason. We have only so much time. I have so much material I got to get through. And the only way I can do it is if I keep myself on task. And I actually use the PowerPoints to keep me on task. So rather than you sitting there and just writing, you know, death by PowerPoint, I actually provide them to you in outlines in advance. So you literally can print them out, bring them to class, and just fill in the gaps. Make your life easier. And you will see, unless I tweaked, every now and then I do tweak some so they might be off, but for the most part, word for word, whatever is on this is, you know, what you'll see on the screen. So you can see we have a lot to get through. We're going to give a little introduction. We'll start it once I'm done babbling about the syllabus. Start learning about what government is in general. Then we'll do some lessons on federalism, different models of federalism, because our system actually impacts state and local government. So we'll talk about that and how history changed and evolved. There is a good reading here that you should read. But I'm pretty sure the reason why I have the space here is I think this is going to be the content for the first exam. So this probably means this is what I'm going to try doing on the second exam. So a little bit on the U.S., the Constitution of states, and in particular, the Massachusetts Constitution. The dynamic between state and local, kind of like how we did the dynamic between the federal government and the states. And then we'll talk about the state legislature. So again, this is probably an exam. If I had to guess, 6, 7, and 8, I think that's usually how I do it. Governors, the state courts, and the state bureaucracy. And then we finish the semester on probably the more interesting stuff, elections and political parties and, you know, the nature of local government. That's what we're going to do. That's the map. So don't ever let me know or come up to me and say, I have no idea what we're doing. Because I'll say, do you use in the outlines? It's all there, literally in front of you. Questions? All right. While I'm here, on the syllabus, but I didn't have it on there. I have a whole bunch of classroom rules. Take a look at it. One of the things I have on there is you do not have my consent to record me. But I also let you know that I do record every single class. And what I do is I do not edit it. I do not chop it up. If I say fuck in class, it's going to come up on the recording. But I do this as a tool. Because I understand listening to my high-pitched, annoying voice for 75 minutes, you know, is about as entertaining as watching paint dry. So what I do is I record it just in case you space out, and I will post the lectures online so you can go back and listen to it. So if you're absent, just like the outlines, you can go back and listen to class, and you'll know what we covered in class. No need to send me an email saying, Professor, I was out, what did I miss? And I will post all the lectures here where it says audio lectures, right here. In fact, I've already put a hyperlink for them today, but there's no file behind it, but I'll get the file up there before the end of the day. But before you access the recordings, make sure you read the blurb. Like I said, I am a lawyer. There is some legalese there. All right, so we have your page down here. You have the audio lectures, and the last thing on here that's going to be important to you is the paper requirement. Make sure you read this carefully, because on here I explain the nature of the assignment. One of the most important things is that your paper
will be graded based on word count. Word count of the body. It's all explained here. I expect you to write it as it says. I want you to use the Chicago style. I don't want you to use ALA or MLA or any of those other things that I have no idea what they are because they were all invented long after I went through college. Instead, I want you to use footnotes, which even if you've never used footnotes, it's no big deal. Every single word processing program has in it the method to actually do all your footnotes for you. So it's going to give you an opportunity to learn your word or whatever you use a little better. But using footnotes is not that hard. Plus, the nice thing about footnotes is you get to actually visually see how many facts you put in your paper. Because under the Chicago style, you actually have to put a footnote in after every sentence that has a fact that's not public knowledge. So, you know, for me, you know, whenever I write a paper and I end up with 50 or 60 footnotes, I'm like, wow, look at all the research I did. You know, that's a good thing. But I want you to use footnotes. Grade it on word count. Write a topic. I mean, a paper about anything you want, as long as it's related to state and local government. By the way, I do explain footnotes here. I'll give you a little bit. I also give you some links to some sources to help you do it. And here's my grading system. Everything that has a penalty listed here, I talk about above. And you'll get the penalty if you don't follow directions. But if you do follow directions, you won't get the penalty. So, it is possible that you are an awful writer. Your writing is atrocious. You cannot do English grammar for the life of you. Well, if that's the case, the worst grade you're going to get, as long as you follow all of the other directions, is an 85. Because as I go through it, I do a little tally sheet estimating how many grammatical mistakes or spelling mistakes that I find. And if you get more than 40, the biggest penalty you can get is minus 15. So if you're an awful writer, you walk away with a B. That's 20% of your grade, so long as you follow directions. Oh, but if you are an awesome writer and you think you are above my directions, you could actually walk away with a grade in single digits. I have it happen. I've had it happen before. Because it's just a matter of minus 5, minus 3, minus 5, minus 10, just doing the math. I actually had one student one time, and I'm not exaggerating, ended up with a grade in the negatives. I rounded it up to a zero. They failed the class anyways. What? No, it was awful. And in fact, I think I even put in the comments, like, I don't believe you just wasted 30 minutes of my life on this planet, Earth, making you read this. It was, you could tell, they totally forgot about it, did it 5 minutes before and just submitted, thinking they would get, you know, mercy points. In order for me to be fair, I apply the same standards to everybody. And at the end of the day, it just is what it is. We'll talk more about the paper as we go forward. And by the way, if you have any questions about anything, ask. I want questions. Because if you have a question about something in terms of how the class goes, there's a chance that somebody else in the class also has the same question. And if they are too scared or shy to ask, but you ask it, we'll all be on the same page because we'll be able to get the answer. I don't keep secrets. If there's something on there you don't understand and you ask me, I will give you a direct answer. I don't play games. But if you don't ask, I do the best I can to get everything out to you, but sometimes I forget. When we're going, if I lose you, ask. I will do everything I can to answer your question.
even if it means, you know, going off on a tangent for 20 minutes. You know, because if the question's important to you, I'd want to do everything I can to answer. Okay? So here we go. Here's the test. We're 50 minutes in, 40 minutes in. Any questions? Yes?
So I was wondering about the pop quizzes and specific for extra credit. My question for those is, you said that we wouldn't be penalizing them. Mm-hmm. So how would it work when it comes to getting extra credit if we don't have anything to base that off?
So what I do is I add the points into the sum total of the points that you earn from the graded material.
Okay.
So, say you get a 65 on the first exam, all right? So that means you have 65 points. The next exam, you have 80. The next one was like a 73. You end up getting a total of raw points. At the end of the semester, I add all of the extra credit points that you earn into that, and I still divide by 5, essentially. So basically what it works out is, every 5 points that you earn getting extra credit stuff, that's equal to adding 1 point to your final average. But here's the catch. If you earn no extra credit points, how many points get added to your final average? 0. So it's not punitive. I do that because at extra credit, I want it to be optional. And by the way, as we go forward, pretty much sky's the limit. I've actually had students that had grades that were in the F range that walked out with a C because they just kept doing everything they could to boost their average. And if that's what you need to do to pass the class, that's fine with me. No worries. Still work.
Other questions? Yes?
Do you use a lockdown browser for the tests? Or is it just on Blackboard?
I've been trying to figure out how to do it.
And if I can figure it out this semester, yes. If I can't, no.
Okay.
Why?
Are
you thinking about doing some shenanigans when it comes to exam time?
No, I transferred from school and they used it, so it was just a question I had.
Oh. Yeah, I've been working on trying to get it down. It just doesn't make sense to me. But, your exams will be timed, though, and I will try making them that it will actually take the full time. And you will see one question at a time, whether it's an essay or it's multiple choice, and there's no going back. So if you skip, it's wrong. But I'll remind you when we get close to that. Do you know how to set up the lockdown browsers? Because we can talk after class.
I know how to use it.
But do you know how to set it up?
Maybe.
Oh, nice. Get it this semester. Other question. What school did you come from?
University of New Haven.
Oh. How'd you end up up here?
I live up here, so it was just a lot easier.
Thanks. That's quite a hike.
Yeah. One last question.
Sure.
This is not about the class. I don't know where the restroom is on this building.
Do we have the men's room on this floor? So, again, they did a remodel over the last couple of years. There was one point when it was every other floor.
Okay.
So if you go down the hall this way, there's some restrooms over there. If it's the ladies' room, you may have to go upstairs or downstairs.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Other questions? All right.
Before I forget, maybe I'll do it when he comes back. I do gotta do it. Abigail? Okay, very good. Alfonso? No, Ariana, sorry. I apologize. So what they do is they put your middle names in here, not just first and last, and I get confused sometimes. Saisha? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's pretty good. Not that bad. Marcos? Okay, very good. Travis? That could have been Travis. John? Okay, very good. Kyla? No. Aiden? No. Morgan? All right, there we go. And I know Chris. Young man in the red. What's your name?
Marcus.
Oh, you raised your hand. All right, I got you. So, okay. And you did it, you did it. Okay, so we just get that kid who came in. All right, cool. All righty. Is this the right one? Oh, yeah, it's from 2013. Okay. Slideshow. All right, here we go. We're going to start the semester off with a hugely complicated and subjective question. What's government? What is government? Yes, sir.
A system in place in order to create rules and guidance over a group of people, a community, or like a society, in order to make it function.
Ooh, that's a good definition. I like that. So you got a system that involves some type of mechanism to make rules or laws, call it what it is, to give guidance. I like the way you said that, not to like control or to impose, but to give guidance in order to keep society kind of humming on all cylinders. All right, that's pretty good. I like that. Anyone else? Is it necessary? Do we need government?
Yes.
Why?
I think it's one of those things that's kind of difficult to avoid, because if you have a group of people, you're going to have some form of like leadership or some form of people working together, even if it's just everyone does a separate thing, or even if like no one does anything, it's like there's still the unspoken rule of no one interacts with each other.
Can you have a functioning society if you have small groups of people going off kind of doing whatever they want, whenever they want, however they want?
Really depends on like what would be considered a functioning society.
All right, well, how would you define a functioning society?
Like everyone has their basic needs met, and there's also room for like other things to happen, usually like technological advancements and such.
Okay, so we got basic needs met and we have technological advancements. So basically there's enough calm to allow for those to take place.
Yeah. Like, it could be, like, really any kind of, like, other things going on, like, arts or music or, like, just community stuff. But, like, the really important thing, I think, is, like, everyone should have their basic needs met.
Okay. Everyone. So government exists, in your opinion, to allow everyone's basic needs to get met.
I think that should be
the case. Do they have to earn it?
No.
Why not?
Because, like, earning it, it's kind of, like, it's the government's job to like protect people. Like, what would earning it be? Like, what are we like placing value on like human life? Because like denying people of those basic rights is like condemning them to death, kind of.
Well, not necessarily. Because what happens if you can do and you choose not to? Is it right that someone else does for you when you can do? So I have no problem with the idea of like a safety net, helping someone out who may need help. But if someone can do for themselves, why should government? Because government is us. And government only exists by taking part of what we earn. Why should those who do have to supplement those who can but choose not to?
Because it's also supplementing themselves, like things like public roads, things like the mail, things like law enforcement, like taxes and such go into that as well. And irregardless, one day people who can will become those who cannot, because I feel like disability can happen. People age, they become older, their bodies stop working, things like that. And it's it's kind of inevitable that at some point people will no longer be able to work. And I think it's also been proven that people generally like to do things. They like to contribute. It's very rare that there is a person who is just generally not doing anything. Like, people contribute in their own ways. Like, I could be, like, organizing things, people cooking for each other, people cleaning things up, people doing, like, labor that they're not paid for. It's not necessarily just, like, a job and contributing to the economy. I think it's also, like, supporting each other in different ways.
Okay, interesting. You got a different take on that?
I think that government in specific is a way that's used to display public energy as well as a way to what's said to be a safety net. I don't believe it's a safety net anymore because our state and local government has been falling through with around the country, with multiple states falling through between protections of different people. So I think that government has become today is a way to get political gain or and monetary gain as well as an image gain.
Interesting. Could you just clarify image? What do you mean by image?
Public faces. So
popularity.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not so for the individuals in government.
Yeah.
Superstar status.
I think the whole point of government is the way that the human nature has to compete with other people.
Okay.
We as humans and animals have always competed with each other. We look at sports, we look at cards, we look at games, we look at work. We always have people who are trying to out-compete us. So I think that that's the whole point of government, is to find somebody to out-compete and get that better image.
Okay, interesting. I like that. Anybody else? Different opinions. Now, do you want to know the most beautiful thing? And I bet you no one in your life has ever told you this. Your politics is your opinion. And your opinion is just as valid as everyone else's. The political process is about the competition of opinions. And ultimately, the right opinion in any given moment is determined by those people who are in office. But if the people don't like their opinion, what can we do to those people that are in power? Process allows us to replace them with somebody else. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm very old-fashioned. I believe that in order to really understand things, you have to go back to the source and look at what I guess we would call the original intent. So, have any of you, when you were in high school, or maybe you took U.S. government or something like that, have any of you heard of a guy by the name of George Washington? Have you ever read what I believe, personally, should be required reading? Have any of you read George Washington's Farewell Address? That is one of the most important documents. It's not considered a founding document. But it's one of the most important documents in understanding the vision of the guys who made the system had for posterity, everyone who came afterwards. And he said in it, and I quote, "The government is the offspring of our own choice, uninfluenced and unawed." In other words, we decide what we want for government. Adopted upon full investigation and mature deliberation. In other words, if you're going to make a government, it can't be half-ass. It can't be reactionary. It takes a lot of work to figure out what works best, not for all, but for most. Going back to the quote, "Completely free in its principles and in the distribution of its owners, uniting security with energy and containing within itself a provision for its own amendment." Just because government is what it is today does not mean that's what it always has to be. You can change government as times change.
And the purpose is to provide opportunity for everyone,
everyone, to have security and opportunity. Going back to the quote, the very idea of the power and the right of the people to establish government presupposes the duty of every individual to obey the established government.
We pick our government. We design our government. The government's supposed to exist for us. We're not subjects of the government.
Very, very meaningful. Very, very meaningful. So, we've already talked about a definition. Your book gives a definition of what government is, and essentially is what was covered. That it is a mechanism, a creation. It's a group of people that work in offices or institutions that are essentially tasked with making and enforcing the rules. Society. And ultimately, the reason why government exists is to do those things that we can't do for ourselves. So, as was mentioned earlier, paving roads. You know how much it costs, mostly because of government rules and regulations in Massachusetts, but you know how much it actually costs just to pave 1 mile of roads in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Any of you have any idea? It costs about $300,000 per mile. So think about the community in which you live in, and think about how many miles and miles and miles of roads there are. In my town, Sutton has a population just under 10,000 people. Still regarded as a farming community, even though we're really not anymore, but we have over 120 miles of roads. You know how much it would cost for us to rip up all of every single square inch of roads and repave it? And then how long would it last? You'd have to do it every 10 to 15 years. So do you want to know why there's so many potholes everywhere? It costs so much money, and there's not much money available for one person to do it. Heck, there's not even enough money available if the whole community gets together and pulls their money to do it. Very expensive. Very expensive.
Now, our government at the United States level actually has guidance on what government should be doing. And that is actually articulated in the Declaration of Independence, written by Thomas Jefferson.
In it, Jefferson said that governments are instituted among men to secure our unalienable rights,
life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The United States government should only be doing those things that basically allow us to maximize freedom. Freedom for us to work hard, to earn what we can earn, and pursue whatever it is in life we want to pursue.
Is that the definition of happiness? Or the pursuit of happiness?
Yes. Yeah, pursuit of happiness doesn't mean you can do whatever you want, whenever you want.
No, but
the pursuit of happiness is what they focused on. So, you're never going, as a human being, ever going to be happy or satisfied. You're always going to want a little more. So they believe you should do whatever it takes. You should be allowed to do whatever it takes to make you happy. So long as you do not interfere in someone else's pursuit. So, I listen to death metal music. And as I'm sitting there, and I am wanting to listen to it so loud that my ears begin to bleed, I cannot do so in my community after 9 p.m. You know why?
Noise complaints.
We have sound ordinances that basically say there are quiet hours in town. So government made a rule that during the day, I can make as much noise as I want to, but at a certain point, I have to be respectful of my neighbor. And guess what? It applies to my neighbor as well. Because you think I want to be listening to his country music at 2 o'clock in the morning blasting on 11? No, I don't. Now, at the state level, each state government has defined purposes of government. And in Massachusetts, you actually can find it in the preamble of our state constitution. By the way, you're going to be required to read good chunks of our state constitution. You all know that every single state has a constitution, right? So it's not just the United States Constitution. Every single state has their own. And interestingly enough, our constitution is the oldest continuing used constitution in the history of the world. Our constitution in Massachusetts is older than the U.S. Constitution. But in our constitution, written by John Adams, in the preamble it states, essentially the purpose of government is, and I quote, to secure the existence of the body public, to protect it, and to furnish the individuals who compose it with the power of enjoying in safety and tranquility their natural rights and blessings of life. You have a fundamental right to be whatever you want to be. And government cannot stop you. Unless, of course, you choose to interfere in the lives of somebody else. That is not allowed. Questions? So here's a softball question. How does government make sure we have the ability to be safe, to enjoy tranquility? Pursue our freedoms.
Well, I think the idea is, well, for one, military power, just federally, but for state and local wise, I believe that, I mean, I know that in other places, like Boston, for example, Mayor Wu tends to side with progressive views that protect women's health and, immigrants, so that in itself is protection.
Okay, so she has her opinion on her politics.
Yes.
But what allows the mayor of any city to pursue any type of action?
Being voted in.
Well, you have to get into office first, and then once you're in office,
No.
Once you're in office, you have the Constitution that defines the powers of what you can and cannot do in that position. And to enact those policies, it was already mentioned before, you have to do in a manner that's consistent with the Constitution. In other words, government only legitimately can act in a way that's legal.
So here's the funny thing, and I'll use your example.
Mayor Wu helping illegal immigrants, her actions are a direct violation of federal law.
Did she directly state that she was helping illegal immigrants stay in Boston, or was she directly stating that she was helping immigrants, period? Because we have seen that has arrested, and ICE agents have arrested, U.S. citizens.
Hold on a second, though. Here's the thing, right? There's a difference that I think we're going to agree between a legal resident, that's someone who came here through the process that's established through the law, as opposed to someone who crossed the border illegal.
Right, but there has been multiple instances where those people who should have been protected.
Right, and what has happened to them? And what has happened to them?
It's ridiculous that they were arrested in the first place.
Due process.
If I walked outside.
You do understand that policing is completely subjective, right? So if the police officer sees you doing something and they think it's illegal, they do have a right to detain you.
I understand that. Yeah? I understand that, but firstly, if they have proper documentation, as I have a right to show, as they ask you for your ID and proper identification.
And if you don't have it in the moment?
They can run your name. They do it. When you get pulled over and you don't have a license.
Well, here's the thing. If you get pulled over and you don't have a license, your name may not be in the system unless, of course, there's warrants.
If there's a social security number or a...
If you are an illegal immigrant, you don't have a social security number.
Yes, okay. I'm not saying anything about illegal immigrants.
Right, but what I'm saying is that
immigrants.
Her helping legal people who are here, right? There are state agencies that provide those services,
yeah.
Right? But there are a limit to the services that are provided. But if a mayor is going to interfere with federal law enforcement, she herself could be subject to pains and penalties of the law.
Yes.
Because the law
with
is written out in
guidelines. Yeah.
Exactly. So ultimately, it's the law that should be the determining factor. Yes or no? Do you agree with that?
Yes, but as of today, people are using the determining factor in their own brain. That's not what the law is.
Sorry, say that again?
If we're continuing using the immigrant thing here, right, we have seen that people are using their own judgment instead of using the law.
Police have discretion. All law enforcement has discretion in the moment.
Okay, and a citizen has the right to stay a citizen and not be arrested.
But if they're not a citizen, they don't have the same rights.
I understand that, but I didn't say anything about illegal. I actually brought up instances.
Right, and anyone who was caught up that was determined and proved to be a citizen, they were released.
They shouldn't have been arrested.
Again, it's probable cause. Probable cause. If you say, you know how sometimes
show an ID.
Let me give you an example.
Or proper documentation for United States living.
They would not be detained if they did not have, or if they had proper ID.
But they have them. You're telling me that these people who are United States citizens legally don't have proper documentation
what
in the system.
What I'm telling you is if you do not have your identification with you, you can legally be detained. If you're driving down the road and you don't have your driver's license with you and get pulled over, they can put the cuffs on you and they can take you to the station.
That's not what I'm saying. But
it's the same process.
But if I don't have to carry identification with me if I'm not driving a car. Correct?
You should.
But I don't have
to. You should because if, going back to the example that I was going to give you, if there's a bomb threat on campus and the police are doing a sweep and the police see you running out of the building and they think you're a suspect, they have a right to stop you, detain you, and if you don't have identification, proving that you have a legal right to be on campus, you can actually be arrested.
Yes. Okay, I understand that, but I wouldn't be, first of all, it would have been sorted out fast.
You think so?
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a situation where there was an emergency?
Plenty of times.
Really? Like, give me an example.
Oh, okay. You really want me to, trust me, I've been in plenty of situations where there have been police called and,
right.
And
so,
ambulances called.
So it's chaotic, and in a situation of the need to suddenly detain people. You know, the government does make mistakes. I will admit that. But the police also have a right to enforce. Just
so
like ICE has a right to enforce federal immigration.
Right, so does the mayor have a right to protect those?
No, she does not. The mayor does not have a right. The mayor does
not.
The mayor does not have a right to interfere with actions of federal government. The mayor does not have a right. We have a hierarchy. Federal government is supreme.
I understand.
Okay.
I understand.
So politically, okay, we're killing time, and I have a feeling we're not going to agree. Because I'm just talking generally black and white. If you sympathize with the mayor engaging in those types of behaviors, that's fine. But legally speaking, if the mayor interferes with legitimate law enforcement action, she is committing a crime. She does not have a right to do so. Because there's nothing in her powers, the charter of Boston, that give her the right to interfere with federal action. Just like as me as a selectman. If I'm a selectman in my town, my charter defines my powers. And there's nothing in my charter that would allow me to interfere in a water enforcement action in my town. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
Just want to do a little bit of research here.
Yeah, that's fine. All right. So, laws. We're going to talk about the legislative process, how a bill becomes a law. Once the law is in place, the law is, generally speaking, in black and white. Law is like the Old Testament standards, the thou shalt and the thou shalt nots. If an act is illegal, as defined by law, you do not have a right to do it. As much as you may want to run down the street with a bag full of cocaine because you like doing cocaine, because it makes you feel good, you do not have a right to possess said cocaine, because cocaine has been declared an illegal substance. The law has been created, again, as was said by Marcos previously, to kind of guide society, to determine what we're allowed to do and what we're not. Is the law perfect? No. Are mistakes made under the law? Yes. I'm a lawyer. You know how many cases occur on a daily basis because something went wrong? But luckily, we do have a process. So, last minute thought, because I try never to keep you over, and I know our time is almost up. If you ever run into a situation where you run into trouble, comply, comply, comply. Because if you try to resist, even if you were in the right, even if eventually you are exonerated, it will be very expensive. And you will have lots of difficulties till you get to that point. So at the end of the day, it boils down to a very simple, yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. And then you'll never run into problems with the law.
All right, when we come back, we're going to go forward. We're going to continue to try to understand, you know, what government exists. We're going to use some of those political science terms. And maybe at the end of the first session, we'll have a better understanding of the way government should be. Is it perfect? No. Government's flawed like all of us. But if we understand how it should be, maybe we should be working to get it there. More perfect union. All right. What's your name, by the way?
Travis.
Travis, okay. You weren't here when I did attendance. Have a good weekend. Start thinking about your topics. And we'll resume on Tuesday. Yeah, it was nice seeing you again, Chris. Did you have a good summer?
I did.
Nice. Not long enough.
I did.